Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main. I've been a little bit absent lately. I have a good excuse. Joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, by absent, you mean you got kidnapped by those aliens who turned you into a Sasquatch monster, and then you had to replace all your Sasquatch parts with robot parts, and then only after you were fully roboticized were you able to synthesize DNA of a human being, make yourself into a recombinant human, teleport yourself back into the past, and show up just in time for this week's episode.
I did keep some Sasquatch parts. And Justin Robert Young.
Tell him, Bri. Holy cow, it's so good to have you back. There's nothing like you being away for 2 hours for us to realize how necessary you are to the Weird Things podcast. Thank you, Andrew. You're the best.
I'm glad you understand that. So,
lesson has been taught.
Quick question. Which podcast do we want to geek out about all the Star Wars news? Into this one?
Yeah, no, let's just jump straight into this one. I mean, it's on the forefront of all of our minds.
This is, all right. So when we did the Mad Max podcast, there were some people that were like, hey, geeking out about a movie is not weird news. And you have to understand that this is indeed the Weird Things podcast, and we talk about weird things within our purview, but this is really a story of me, Brian, and Andrew hanging out. And if there is something that is headline news for all of us, we are going to talk about it. And I do believe that what was revealed at the D23 event this weekend in regards to Star Wars is in that field. So, Andrew, go ahead.
Brian, are you on board with this?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So, D23, that's the big official Disney convention, of which I couldn't go to because of I was at the Jareth masquerade thing and some other stuff. We had some revelations. We had some new updates. We had some confirmation of some rumors and maybe some stuff we'd heard internally, whatever, couldn't talk about. But here's what we know now. One, we got a kick-ass photo for Star Wars Rogue One, which is the anthology series. For the one person out who does not know, what Disney's going to do is we're going to get a Star Wars film that's Episode 7 coming up this December. Then the next film is going to be one that won't be an 8. It'll be a thing called Star Wars Rogue One, which is sort of within the Star Wars universe and actually takes place before the first Star Wars A New Hope, as it was retroactively called. Then we get Star Wars... we get 7, we get 8, and then we get 9, and then we're going to get between those other Star Wars films. So we got our first cast photo from
Is the Han Solo movie in between 7 and 8?
I believe it's between 8 and 9.
8 and 9, okay. And so, the Josh Trank rumored Boba Fett movie
Phil Lord and the... So what comes next is we get Episode 7 directed by J.J. Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get Rogue One directed by Gareth Edwards, who did
Godzilla and Monsters.
All right. And they show us the first photo of this. So this takes place right. This is the mission that stole the plans for the Death Star. So it probably ends with somebody handing them off to Princess Leia or whatever. But this is the team, the ragtag team of bounty hunters that went after that. And if you look at the photo, it's kind of cool because it looks like they're actually on Yavin, which was the rebel base in Star Wars.
Which photo is it?
Go to StarWars.com.
Yep.
Your source for all your official Star Wars news. And you will see a link that says...
There we go. That's the photo right there, the Rogue One photo.
Wait, they're able to intuit that this is Yavin from this photo?
I intuited that it's Yavin from that photo.
Well, okay, first of all, I don't doubt you. You're the asshole who recognized everything, and spoiler alert, you figured out, like, just looking at the teaserest of teaser freaking trailers
Super 8.
Super 8, that's what it was. You call up the cinematographer, and the first words out of your mouth are like, so he's in the water tower, huh? And he's like, what are you talking about? And of course, you're right.
So, yeah, I could be wrong, but it looks, you got an old stone structure, you got weeds and stuff. It's the right time frame and all that, so it makes sense that, you know, if you want to tie it into that, that would be, you know, it's not that I don't care. I mean, it sounds cool. I'm into it and all that. You know, I'm not one of these people like, oh, they got the cape wrong. They ruined it. You know, I hate those fans.
Yeah.
Sure, hate them. I hate them.
What's important about this photo is that it looks grim for a reason. You know, I think when people get upset about like the quote unquote dark, gritty reboot problem, it is when otherwise happy situations are made dark unnecessarily. Fantastic Four, Superman, stuff like that. This looks like a bunch of people who are about to go on a suicide mission because it's a movie about a bunch of people who are about to go on a suicide mission.
Yep. It's so Gareth Edwards, who I think is a very capable director. The cinematographer is the guy that what was the last one he did? He's done a lot of really gritty, films. I think Zero Dark Thirty. And I think did he do cinematographer? I should know this off the top of my head. Zero Dark Thirty.
While Andrew's looking that up, Brian, what are your first thoughts on this?
Man, it's tough for me to want to invest myself in speculation on this at all. Mainly just because I've been very deeply burned, and I understand this is my fault. It's not Disney's fault. I played this game of fantasizing and wishing and hoping, and I got burned not once, twice, but thrice. And so it's tough for me to invest myself. Plus, I have enjoyed the Star Wars universe. I'm guarded. I'm guarded forever. And understand, it's not just from the prequels. The prequels was three times investing myself emotionally and then feeling burned. But I really gave myself full force to the expanded universe. I truly gave my heart to it, and I loved it. And then was told that none of that counts, and it's all lies. I don't know.
But I think that second part is what is important about what we're seeing with Rogue One, because number one, it is lower stakes. Like, it's not like Han Solo is going to show up and start playing yo-yo, and then we're going to have to pretend like Han Solo always loved yo-yo throughout the, you know, original trilogy or something like that, where they're just like retconning gigantic pieces of our childhood.
Right.
This is an expanded universe story made into a movie.
Which, again, yes, I'm totally down for, but it's like I've been burned on both sides. I've been burned on official canon, the prequels, sucking and being like, no, you have to understand this is the real story. And I've been burned by actually liking stuff that in the expanded universe and then being told after the fact, oh, yeah, by the way, stop loving that. It doesn't count. So it's like,
OK, I'll give you a gimme. I'm like, we all hoped Phantom Menace was going to be great. And then 10 minutes in, you know, some of us realized this is a disaster. Everything we feared that we'd heard was true and even worse than we could have thought.
Yeah.
The expanded universe stuff, like I loved that stuff, but I was never wedded to it because like I loved Heir to the Empire. I also loved Dark Horse's Dark Empire. Both of them weren't true. Both of them could not be real. Star Wars could not accommodate both of those stories. And there's been a lot of expanded universe stuff that just contradicted each other. And so I never took it as, and canon is sort of a weird word that means that we want to believe that it's real and we want someone to tell us what's real.
Well, I mean, and it really is us asking mom and dad who's right in the argument, right? Because we might love different things and we ask mom and dad, no, but who's real? Who's right? Who's canon? You know, like, I mean, I guess like for me, the big, and it is clearer now that Star Wars and Marvel are both under Disney, because Marvel, we understand different writers write for these different characters all the time. Sometimes Aunt May is dead. Sometimes Aunt May is a cyborg. Cyborg.
Like, no, it's fine. Robot. She's a Cyberman on Doctor Who.
Peter Parker's a clone for 10 years.
Exactly. And things get rewritten over and over and over and over and over and over again. And sometimes there are hard reboots, like what Marvel and DC have done in the last 5 years, where they've just said, yeah, you want to know what? And we're done with that story. We begin with a new story right now. So the idea that we are just getting a now totally cohesive top-down story. To me, for fans of canon, for fans of connective story, this is hugely great news that we are going to get these stories. People are actually going to give a rat's ass, and it's not just going to be a conversation of like, well, the rights are to this person.
So here's the thing. When somebody like me in my position says, I don't know, I'm guarded, I hope it'll be good, whatever.
You're wrong not to unconditionally love it, Brian. You're wrong.
Well, and that's just it, right? Is essentially what I'm doing is I'm flinching. And when a dog flinches, when you act like you're going to punch it, that's because that dog has experienced pain and it regrets trusting unconditionally. Twice I've trusted unconditionally. I invested. I mean, you're talking to a guy who's read 20 expanded universe novels. And then it was a significantly painful thing to be told, yes, please actively forget all of those. They don't count. And it was also significantly painful for me to wait all night, you know, for the prequels 1, 2, 3 at a time and be told that, okay, these count, but the better stories don't.
What was the first expanded universe thing you read?
It was Heir to the Empire. Then I read Tales from Jabba's Palace, which was extraordinary. You had all these science fiction authors
take a crack at
Tales from the Cantina, Tales of the Bounty Hunters.
Can I tell you my first expanded universe story?
Sure. Yeah, please.
Splinter the Mind's
God
Eye.
God damn it. No, that doesn't count. That was dumb. That was a bad book, and you should feel bad for having read it.
I was 10, Brian.
Okay,
I
fine.
Was 10. There was a time, there was this great period of which Heir to the Empire, which they had this big, huge publishing, all of a sudden there are all these books out there in the Star Wars universe. Before that is a hungry, desperate Star Wars fan who lusted over a copy of Han Solo at Star's End that I saw at my friend's house, that I contemplated stealing it so I could read this thing that was out of print, okay? Splinter of the Mind's Eye, Alan Dean Foster. This was the book that Lucas authorized this book, gave his notes, whatever. Takes place between Star Wars. Well, it doesn't place. It takes place between Star Wars and nothing because it ain't canon anymore.
Sure.
Luke and Leia have this big romance in there. A lot of stuff happens.
That's right. I forgot about that part.
And so I was used to the whole idea of like, no, that didn't happen. So let's not forget the Marvel comics. I used to read the Star Wars Marvel comics, the Sunday comics, all that stuff. Our rabbit in the jet in the Rebels, the Rebel Rabbit. Remember that guy?
No, I don't. But that sounds awesome.
No. Yeah, no. There is a rabbit character.
It's
a Jack that,
or whatever. Star Wars Rabbit.
Well, here, Brian. Let me ask you this: is there a? Is it because?
Jackson, sorry.
Sorry. Say that again, Andrew.
Jackson.
Jackson.
Right? Is it because you love the franchise so that you feel that? The idea that one,
Jackson's from Planet Coachella Prime.
Coachella?
I hear TV on the radio's headlining this year. At
That's
Coachella
amazing.
Prime.
They're going to have a hologram of the Emperor showing up. Yeah. He's like, what's up, Coachella?
Hail Mary, come quick see. What do we have here now?
Oh. I'll tell you, anybody who picked up a reference of the Empire rapping Tupac, write me at Justin Robert Duncan. all right. So is it because you love Star Wars so much that you feel that it is a betrayal that they got rid of the canon of the expanded universe? Because this is a common thing. Like Marvel does it all the time. DC does it all the time. And I'm with you. I understand your pain, but just to illustrate it for the listener, like, where does that come from? Why is that different? That's the weird part, right?
The simplest place for my head to be is, well, screw Star Wars. I'm out. I hate Star Wars because it screwed me over. That's a black and white simple thing. But the problem is I still deeply, deeply love the universe. I love the stories that it tells. I love the archetypes. I am currently in the middle, spoiler alert, when it comes to talking about picks later, we're going to talk, my picks will be Rebels because I'm loving watching it with Penny. However, I have to acknowledge that I have been seriously burned. I got burned, and there is genuine pain.
What makes it different than when comics do it? Like, I guess that's my question, because I know you're a huge comics fan. I know that you have seen this revisionist history all the time made by the powers that be. Like, what makes it unforgivable for Star Wars. Not unforgivable, right? Because like I know if it's good, you'll like it, right?
Right.
But it's like, what makes it more painful? Or is it just that now it's slower with Star Wars than it is with comics?
You know, number one, that's a really good question. Number two, I feel like if I was going to take a guess, I would say that Star Wars has lost none of its ability to seduce me. What it has lost is my default position to be to, it's all part of a plan. They've got it. They've got something that they're working out or whatever. And I would say that comic books really never had that to begin with. I would say I'd love comic books. And so there's certainly arcs that I loved deeply, but comic books as a general genre was such a mixed bag that there was always like nutty stuff. You know, it's like, you know, do you love or do you hate the Mr. Fix-It era of the Incredible Hulk where he works as a bodyguard in Vegas or whatever? It's like, for me, I loved it. I thought that was a wonderful side journey because it was a weird, you know, antithesis of what the Hulk story had always been. The idea that Banner was the useless appendage on the other side of the Hulk instead of the other way around. I thought it was great, you know, and some people hated the Secret Wars because it was a naked grab for the ability to sell toys, but I loved it because it distilled everything into archetypes, and it was the exact same fantasy that we would play in second grade with all of the stuff. But the problem is, in the last 10 years, I would say, well, maybe 15. For 15 years, let me flip it back on you. For 15 years, name one truly great thing that's come out of the Star Wars universe.
Wait, in the last what?
15 years. Since the first prequel came out till now. I'll give you a couple of the video games, but keep in mind, like, the best video games, X-Wing versus TIE Fighters, happened before then.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why Lucas, it was a franchise that one guy who was bored with it was running it versus Marvel, which was a healthy thing, bringing in new talent and constantly revitalizing it.
Again, that's why I am cautiously optimistic, but the emphasis is on cautiously here. And part of the reason I asked that question is
Brian, you have made exactly the point. The point is regime change. That's what's different, is that the palaces have been cleaned out. There are new people that are in there that have a track record of success with this kind of stuff, and that you take whatever we love inherently, whatever is special about the Star Wars story, and put it in capable hands, and then give us little breadcrumbs. And by the way, we are in the weirdest phase of this right now, which is why I honor and understand your pain and trepidation.
Well,
because like now, if things are good, then we'll be like, yeah, right, they're good now. These new people made good things. That's what's the difference. If they're bad, then we'll be like, yeah, people can get these things wrong. But right now, we are just in this evidence-less position where we just say, all right, competent people with this stuff can't get it wrong.
So
can they?
Okay, real quick. I think we may have stumbled into a really interesting question. What is the best three things that have come out of the Star Wars universe in the last 15 years? Things that you cannot include are Shadow of the Empire came out in the mid-90s. You can't 96. Include the Timothy Zahn series, which was extraordinary, but also came out in the 90s. I would submit, here's my pick for the best Star Wars thing of the last 15 years is Knights of the Old Republic, one and two. I would say especially one on the Xbox. Oh, that was extraordinary.
Can I put out my best thing?
Yeah.
Rebels.
You know what? You're right. Yeah, no, I'll give you that. Rebels is really, really good. I'm falling in love with Zeb minute by minute. I love his character.
And I guess that in Rebels, like, there were some good Clone Wars stuff. There were some good Clone Wars episodes. You could tell there were people there that loved it, were very passionate about it, and then some guy walks into the room and says, you know, there's this political thing I think we should address. You know, let's do a three-part thing about how banks control, you know, funding to these things and da-da-da-da. And you're like,
I wonder who that person was.
I don't know. Just a guy, like an office guy, like an office boy. Maybe
just
a woman.
Some
maybe
random dude just came in and
Sally
said,
Sally
like,
the copy girl.
You know,
goes
I
in
just
there.
Really think that there's a lot that we need to understand about banks.
Yeah, you know, and so you could tell that there were people there, you know, you watch just any one episode of Clone Wars and visually you go, one of the most amazing things ever on television. And then you get some of those episodes, like the three arc stuff, when they did the Rise of the Bounty Hunters and some of that other stuff, a lot of which is too drawn out, but it was still, there was some great, great, great stuff in there. Now, for Rebels, you can tell they cut the budget back, you know, that the animation isn't anywhere nearly as complicated. There's a lot of things, the time frames and all that stuff. But the writing, that team, that group of people, the way they're pulled together, I thought it's very compelling. The humor, I mean, that so much of it is like brothers beating up on each other kind of humor that I'm like, man, I'm glad they do this, but I could see people getting upset by the fact this little robot just knocked a kid off of the spaceship, you know, kind of thing. And
sure,
you know.
Sure. Oh, no. We'll talk more about Rebels, but I will say that enters my top three. Rebels, I think, definitely is top three from the last 15 years. Knights of the Old Republic, I would say the full game. The Old Republic, the MMO, man, did I want to love, but it didn't quite get there. So I'll put Knights of the Old Republic, the Xbox game. Is there anything else that fits in that third slot?
There were some novels and stuff that people loved.
To me, Star Wars Celebration. Like, it is the idea of it as a, that the fans meant something. That the fans showed up and the collection and understanding that for one property, they can draw the crowd that they do, that led this to salvation. And if these are good, right? If the regime change worked. Because that's the thing, is Brian, for what you're saying, I have very little interest in picking apart the dying embers of a creator's journey with his work of art, like, and saying, hey, what was the best element of the weakest stretch of an idea? What I do have an interest in is looking forward, and I think with the kindling that made that fire that is right now building and will culminate with episode 7 and everything else that comes afterward is the fact that people give a rat's ass and they want to see more of these characters treated with respect.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but even as you're saying this, I'm realizing that, and we've talked about this on the show, I think that I have some core issues that cause me to be deeply attracted to interesting beginnings and not very good at being fascinated by stewardship. And we're entering the stewardship phase of Star Wars. Whoever inherits it, it's their job to not screw it up. You know, I
totally disagree about that.
Oh, really?
Oh, I think like it is incumbent upon them to start a beginning. I think episode 7 is their beginning. I mean, like they need to set up. The reason why they've relied so heavily on what is new about episode 7, that they have very, if you looked at how they've laid stuff out, it was Finn and Lady, I forget her name right now, and BB-8, and then they had the big trailer reveal of Han and Chewie, and now we're hearing about Kylo Ren and where Kylo Ren comes from, and that Kylo Ren isn't his real name and all this stuff. They will begin with the new heroes. They will sandwich in your old favorites, and then they will end with the big bad, the thing that will take down our heroes, because that's where they want you to be when the story begins. That means that the beginning and end of what they want to talk about is the fact that this is a brand new story that is hopefully compelling and interesting about the Star Wars saga. And if they don't start this out good, if this is just fan service, then this is a declining franchise and I have less interest in it.
Well, I think that the thing that gives me hope is that all the rumors leading up to episode 1, you know, there was so many... The fear was Lucas hasn't directed a film since Star Wars. That was number one. Problem number two was, you know, Lucas doesn't listen to anybody anymore. That was another one, right? There was all the stuff leading into that where, you know, there's this like, oh, and we're like, yeah, but you know what? Maybe he's still got the magic. He's still got the brilliance. But then he'd be like, yeah, but you know, he hates Empire the most. And that's the best, you know? And then he put more control over Jedi. And that's kind of half really good and half kind of meh. And then you're on the back of your head is this thing. And then we got the Ewok adventures. Then you got like, no, he's got it. He's got it. So we're just convincing ourselves that these things could really be good.
How could a Star Wars movie be bad?
Yeah. And then you get, you know, the trailer comes out and you're like, okay, Darth Vader's a lot younger than we were thinking. You know, this is it's not going to be really interesting at that age, but he's Lucas. He knows what he's doing. You know, You know, and then you're like, you're watching Phantom Menace. Like, first 3 minutes into Phantom Menace, I'm like, how can this be boring already? You know, like, oh, should we dock the ship and this? Well, let's go in there. And now they're in a goddamn conference room waiting, you know? And then, and then you're like, wow, this feels a little bit. And then you're like, he's not listening to anybody, you know? And then after the movie comes out, it was like the thing that was giving us hope about the other ones, like, yeah, but now he went to his movie-making friends and said, hey, give me feedback on this, give me that. And you hear about people who are telling them, like, well, maybe this, that's not a good sign. And so I guess here, you know, the idea is that there are some very passionate, caring people that want to make this work. I hope that, you know, putting Kathleen Kennedy in there is a sign that they weren't going to leave it to a committee. Iger's the kind of guy, as you see the stewardship with Pixar and with Marvel, is you guys know what you're doing. I will tell you what we want. And if you can give us what we want, we're all going to get along great, you know? Maybe this one's going to be overdone, might have problems with it, whatever. Maybe it's going to kind of be flat and lifeless or whatever. They're going to get it right, you know? They're going to get it right eventually. I'm kind of almost a way more excited about Rogue One because it's like, hey, we just have to tell a story that ends here with characters you don't know anything about. That's exciting to me. And also, the upside of not doing, you know, getting away from, you know, the expanded universe is that, you know, the movie's no longer a checklist. You know, it's not a, when's Mara Jade showing up? You know, when's Thrawn popping in? And I love those characters.
Sure.
I love those characters. And I hope that they say, pluck people from there, you know, to use that. But, you know, it's that checklist entertainment, which is a lot of the Marvel comics. You know, you look at Threads where, you know, they got the costume wrong or I didn't like this thing. And it's like, how's the story?
Because I'll tell you what, how excited would you be? End of episode 7, you know, our heroes defeat whatever element of the First Order, you know, is coming at them. And now you see almost Joker-like in Batman Begins, the revelation that coming from another quadrant is the reinforcements led by Admiral Thrawn. You know, and like it gives them the freedom to do it without being forced or beholden to that universe.
I mean, to be honest, that's the one shred of hope that I have for this whole thing is like, what if this is all part of their play of like, hey guys, here's the team rule is we all loudly denounce anything from the expanding universe being canon and what that buys us that will be unpleasant for the next 4 years. But that what it buys us is anything we want to steal from the expanded universe will be universally beloved and praised.
Or it's, you know, it's Admiral Brushwood and has blue skin and he acts exactly like Admiral Thrawn, except sure. He doesn't have the same hang-ups and problems with the Emperor and, you know, dealings with Mara Jade that we expect of Admiral Thrawn. So when we look at him, we're like, but wait, he doesn't have the following lieutenants on his bridge. This is bull-ess. Like, you know.
My fear is, and I'm afraid that this is going to be real, is those that, like, the biggest problem right now in trying to do franchises is that we get incomplete first movies to launch them.
Agreed.
Because they're like, oh, we're going to tell a big story, so the first one's going to set up all these things, and you're not going to get any. You'll get the A plot is not going to be as important as the B plot. You get to the end of the A plot, and then there's the mustache twirling guy waiting in the bat wings, and da 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 da, and you're like, huh, all right, that was a problem with Prometheus for me. That was why I think Terminator Genesis was such a disappointment. I think that's why so many of these attempts to try to launch these new franchises fail, because they try to set up everything and lay down all this sort of groundwork. And you're like, yeah, but this movie doesn't stand on its own.
Speaking of which, I will just a quick tip of the hat. Boy, oh boy, did I love the two book. It's not a trilogy. What do you call it when there's only two books? Duopoly?
Two books.
Okay, anyway, the two books where in the same universe as Grand Admiral Thrawn, where essentially it's a heist con man movie where you have one guy who knows the tactics of Thrawn, you have a alien that looks close enough to Thrawn, you have somebody who knows what Thrawn would say, and then the three of them together start the rumor that Thrawn's back in the game and that he's real and that, you know, you better get with the Empire real quick. Highly recommended.
Well, and that goes to show there's so much I when they announced they're doing Star Wars anthologies and the idea that we were going to get Star Wars movies between 7 and 8 and all that, you know, my nerdgasm was huge because Star Wars is so much more interesting to me than Jedi's, than, you know, ah, here's the lightsaber, now you got to fight the Sith. It was so much bigger and better than all of that. And the idea that we can have these other kinds of stories, like we're going to get a heist movie, you know, and then we're going to get a young Han Solo movie, you know, which is awesome, you know, by the people that did the Lego movie, which I think is a great choice.
That's what makes me really, really excited about it, is that there were, you know, many times with Andrew driving between, you know, Arby's or Taco Bell that we would talk about Star Wars movies and what would happen. And my point was always Star Wars should have the pick of Hollywood. Whoever is doing a thing, everybody loves Star Wars and everybody would drop their, like, drop everything to make sure and clear their schedule to be part of the Star Wars universe. And what we are seeing right now is a smart person's, at least from my perspective, because I like all these directors, choice, the pick of the litter of people who are doing fun, interesting things to come and be a part of this universe. And the sage wisdom that when they make a decision on one of them and then one of them starts building a tent on set and refusing to interact with directors and telling his actors when to blink and destroying his house, to fire him before he starts production.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit? I assume you're talking about Josh Trank, right? Can we talk about the unusualness of the Josh of the Trank situation?
Sure.
This was a Hollywood Reporter story. Apparently, the gloves are off, and people are like talking to the press, not with names so much, but certainly going on record enough for people in reputable positions to print it that Josh Trank was all the rumors that we had heard about Josh Trank being a menace on set was indeed true. Guys.
So yeah. I'm going to throw out something here, okay? Imagine Bob Iger. We're right in the middle of the show. He Skypes into the show. He's like, you guys talk about Star Wars better than anybody else I know. You guys are great. I want you guys to be the brain trust and directors of a new Star Wars film. It's all yours. Okay.
Yeah.
Complete control. We have complete control. Okay.
can I, you know, with hindsight being 2020, can I say to this fictional person, it's great that you recognize our passion. It's great that you understand that we're eloquent speakers. Understand,
Andrew, you're Bob Iger. Okay. You are actually Bob Iger. Talk to Brian.
Brian, hey. Andrew, Justin. You know, I like to bet on new talent, and I think you guys should do your own Star Wars film.
Oh yeah, right.
Take it.
No. Real quick, Justin. I just Bob Iger. Just a little bit more. What do you mean by saying, you know, we should do a film? What do you mean?
I got $100 million check. Who do I send it to?
Okay,
all right.
Here's my pitch. I can walk it down to Andrew right now. He's in Burbank. It's
Justin,
down the road.
Justin, real all quick. Right.
Here,
Justin,
listen.
Dip. Justin.
Just two meets, okay? The Cantina Band meets Last Tango in Paris. An erotic thriller, the likes of which we've never seen.
Justin, please stop talking. Bob Iger, real quick, just on the business side of things, what are your expectations for this extraordinary check you're about to write us? What do you expect us to deliver?
This is the most important franchise in all, you know, of all media. Uh-huh. And I think guys who talk as passionately about it as you and guys who just seem to have so much knowledge and wisdom about where this should go, what could go wrong?
All right, here we go. Salacious Crumb meets a Beautiful Mind. This is a blockbuster waiting,
Justin,
to happen.
Look, we've already got... I'm sorry, Bob Iger. Real quick, just a couple things, and I know this is poor negotiation. I probably shouldn't be sharing this with you, but has it occurred to you that maybe because people love a thing and because people are able to talk... maybe doesn't qualify them to direct a $100 million budget film?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you over the sound of my pen on this humongous check. You were saying the squeaky part of the Sharpie, it's really like...
All the bounty hunters that are gathered in Empire Strikes Back meet Spice World.
Jump forward 2 years, and out comes Star Wars Anthology. What's the title of this?
The title is The Salacious Boner. And it's just smash cut to me and Justin in a boardroom together with my hands covering my face, shaking my head slowly.
And I'm so excited. Finally, my vision made real.
So let's be clear on this, okay? 2 years later, Bob Iger probably doesn't have a job. Okay. We would all agree that that would go down and it's the dumbest decision ever.
Yeah.
Okay?
Agreed.
Here's my question. Are the three of us, are we to blame?
I would say yes. What's funny is I've already watched the crappy movie that we made, and I'm ashamed.
It's the worst movie ever. It is the worst movie ever. Some people maybe stab their eyes out in the middle of it, okay?
Oh, no. That's good PR.
No. I think Andrew's totally correct. The problem with Fantastic Four is that Josh Trank, bless his heart, wanted to make a Cronenberg-esque body horror movie with the Fantastic Four franchise. And that is a problem that exists on a fundamental level, because that's not the Fantastic Four movie that A is going to be good or B is going to make money. And whatever has happened, past somebody made the decision to write that check and let him hire actors and start shooting for that idea is up to the studio. You know, like he wanted to make a very specific movie. It was up to the studio to say, yeah, that's the movie we want to make.
Here's the thing. I actually think that his vision of the Fantastic Four movie could have worked in a universe where we had already seen a good version of the Fantastic Four movie to begin with. For example, like right now, the best Fantastic Four movie ever created is Brad Bird's The Incredibles. It's very much a Fantastic Four movie, with a couple of twists on there. Imagine a universe where we had seen that two or three times, and then Josh Trank got the chance to take this dark, advanced twist on it.
I have not seen the movie. I don't know how it holds together even narratively. You know, and there's one thing to say the tone's wrong, and there's another thing to say the plots go nowhere and it just doesn't, it's not a complete film. Haven't seen it, don't know. My friends have seen it, that's their complaint. It's not just, it's too dark, it's just too pointless, or the characters aren't developed, or this or that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, certainly so. And I think the you know, what we see in theaters by any account, by any and every account, is something that was tinkered with quite a bit and owes quite a lot to very, very, very heavy reshoots. And so it has become very weird to judge whatever is in theaters for what, you know, when Josh Trank is out by himself saying, I had a great version of this movie and you guys will never see it. He is making the argument that there was something good and now it is bad by way of studio involvement. I think the problem that you face is, what is your concept and is it what people want to see? But now, what I do think is real is, like, and in the same way there's Star Wars anthology movies, I would love for Marvel to get into, once every 3 years, the what ifs.
Give us
a what if anthology for the Marvel Universe. Cast new actors, get some new young person as Captain America, as Tony Stark, do a rad, super offbeat, weird comedy, horror, whatever you want, kind of what if story with this property, I think would be fantastic. And I think that's what this idea could be, but it's not the flagship Fantastic Four movie.
Agreed.
So my point is that, I've heard a lot of stuff about what behind the scenes and some people that were there in New Orleans when this was going on. And regardless of all of that, listen, somebody came to us and asked us to do it. We say yes. Their fault.
Somebody asks you if you are a god.
We're not the grown-ups.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We're not the grown-ups here. Hey, do you guys want to make a Star Wars film? Nah, I'm happy at this, you know, small indie budget thing, you know, and so a lot of bad decisions were made, but there were people who have a hell of a lot more experience in film and producing stuff that were involved in that. And I would say that maybe the choices were all wrong, but there was one choice, one important key choice that was the first bad decision.
Which was what?
Going to a first-time director who directed, not wrote, a $4 million movie that was a really fun movie, genre-defining, but really relied heavily on Max Landis's script, that Max Landis did a great script. that then to say, okay, now we're going to put you in charge of a $120 million production without any intermediary thing and also not knowing fully how do your things get visualized is that, you know? It was perhaps a – you look at the other directors they chose.
Can you as long as we're just making stuff up here, can I would love to hear each of you guys kind of sketch out – because understand, I am somebody who has always, always deeply, deeply loved the Fantastic Four franchise all the way from it was one of the earliest cartoons I remember watching, even when, you know, they gave, I think, the Human Torch's own spinoff thing and replaced him with a robot. I read it through the comics all the way through when the Thing decided to stay on the Beyonder's Secret Wars planet because he could occasionally look like a human being here or there and was replaced with She-Hulk. I loved all of those incarnations. I even stomached and liked enough, you know, the some of the recent movies. I have very specific ideas about what I would like to see the Fantastic Four movie have justice done to it, but I would love to hear what you guys think. If let's say they called us up and said, hey, Trank's out, obviously, you guys do a movie. What would you pitch?
Wait, for which?
For Fantastic Four, man.
Oh, so, I think that for that, if we're producers and picking talent and stuff, I mean, the heart of the Fantastic, and that's the thing too, is Fantastic Four is a character drama. It is the character drama. And that's another thing where I'm like, man, to put that in Trank's hands is, you know, very, very different. And Tensorguy says he disagrees with me. The beginning was good and looked less retouched. We don't know what was there. We don't know what was originally there or what was Trank's thing. We've heard this thing that was the end. We don't know. And so for any of us to say, oh, what he was going to do was great or not, I was in that edit room. You weren't. We don't, you know, I can tell you what, you know, there was. And I can tell you that sign of a guy who comes out the eve the movie's about to be released and trashes it is not a good sign. This is not somebody who sounds like would be really good on set.
No.
You know, that's not helpful. That's not a helpful thing. Even if that's all true, that sort of says, wow. Fantastic Four is about characters. It's about how these people get along. This is how these the relationships between these people. I mean, I'm so glad that, like, you know, they chose the guys who did Lego Movie to do Han Solo, because when you can make the 21 Jump Street sequel work, or the sequel movie, or 21 Jump Street movies work, you know, and it starts off with that movie where, you know, Lord and Miller have, you know, Channing Tatum crying because he can't go to prom, and you already feel for this guy in this very absurd movie, and the next one's just equally absurd, but you care about them. That's really, really powerful. So I'm going to look for somebody who's got really good character chops.
Justin?
The Fantastic Four is an allegory for fame for me. You know, it is a story about people who suddenly have expectations and power that they did not expect, and it affects them in very different ways. The Thing is Chris Farley or John Belushi. He is somebody who is trapped in a physical state for which gives him power, and he can help people around him, and yet it destroys him inside. Johnny Storm is your Lindsay Lohan, is your person who is literally, a danger to himself and others, but yet can help people. Reed Richards is the Tom Hanks, is somebody that gets it, but yet feels responsible for everybody around him that wants to bring them up. And Sue Storm, is the invisible wife, you know, is somebody that is as brilliant as Reed Richards and as big of a part of this, and yet is in the shadows. Dr. Doom is the greatest villain in the history of Marvel Comics. He is the person that actual villains in this world do. They go to weak countries and take them over and leverage them against the world. This is a modern story. It has never been more relevant than it is in 2015. As we look at a universe in which SpaceX exists, we can go to, you know, private entities. Somebody could be going to space right now that we just don't know about, and for whatever reason is not carried or covered, you know?
I'm the director.
This is an amazing time to have the Fantastic Four be a real and prescient story. I would make it it is the most modern franchise that I could imagine, and it pains me
that we did, that we missed yet another opportunity at it.
This is amazing because I think just in what you said, you convinced me. You brought me over to your side because my whole thought was that when I think of the Fantastic Four, I think about all of my megrims going into the Captain America movie. There's no way a Captain America movie could actually work. It's too cheesy. It's too USA in a world where it's like, you know, most Americans are ashamed that we went invading Arab countries here and there and all this stuff. There's no way that they can make this work. But instead, they fixed it by making it a period piece, and they made it a study that harkened us back to those days when everybody wished they could join the military to go do their part to fight Nazism and so on. And so my play was always, just as Captain America did it, embrace that background and embrace that cheesiness and, you know, all that aw shucksness. And take us along for the ride. And I would love to see a Fantastic Four movie set in the middle of the 1950s at the height of the Cold War, where this is how we get our revenge against the Reds and so on. Because again, you know, Fantastic Four rose to fame, rose to prominence in the age of Sputnik, or I think it was late 60s is when it came out. But the point is, I think your story, Justin, is better. Using the Fantastic Four as an allegory for fame is amazing because Fantastic Four is unique among characters in the Marvel Universe in that they've always embraced having their real names showcased right next to their character.
But, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing that's happened with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Is that all of the main characters don't have secret identities.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which correct. Is, you know, and they just said, let's get rid of the, I wonder if they'll find out, and just kind of run with it. Here's my suggestion for a director for the Justin Robert Young version of FF.
Okay.
This guy's handled action. This guy's handled comedy. He's handled Hollywood entertainment, fame, that aspect of it. This person has also handled a Marvel movie, Shane Black.
Oh my God! I would die to see the Shane Black Fantastic Four movie.
Which movie did Shane Black do?
Iron Man 3, Lethal Weapon. The script writer for Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He directed. Reportedly, if you're looking for a non-controversial director, he is certainly somebody that has rubbed people the wrong way. Not so much recently. He apparently had a fairly good relationship doing Iron Man 3, but that was working with Robert Downey Jr., who is kind of his rabbi. That's perfect. Absolutely perfect to understand the elements of that. But it's like, here's the thing. What's amazing about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is how much it has taken from the two franchises that it doesn't have. Spider-Man and Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. Exactly what you said, Andrew. None of the Avengers have secret identities in the way that they do in the comics. That's exactly Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four, you know, at the point in Iron Man 2, when he says, yeah, so you know I'm Tony Stark, here's my address, come at me, bro. Like, that is, you know, everyone knows where the Baxter Building is. The Baxter Building constantly gets attacked by people because they know where the Fantastic Four live, and that weighs on Reed Richards that I'm bringing this upon my family, even if they're superpowered, and everybody else that lives and works in this place. The quick quip of Spider-Man is all over the MCU, so... Oh man. I mean, it's just so sad. I'm hopeful that maybe this has been so radioactive that Fox is motivated to make
some
kind of
let go of their agreement. Take it back, Disney. Own that crap. Own that crap.
I don't think it will.
I'll tell you, the smart strategy on Fox is announce another FF movie. Announce it now, new director. What's that?
They have it scheduled.
And I think say, yeah, it's going to be maybe the same actors, because you know they got a great cast for it.
No, great cast. I liked everybody in the cast, and the fact that Michael B. Jordan. I think Michael B. Jordan could be a great Johnny Storm, and he is completely wasted in a movie in which they're all supposed to be dour and upset about their powers because he's the one character. That's like, yes, finally, like, I get to fly and I light on fire and everyone wants my junk. This is the best.
And I have a way for Fox to spin it.
Go ahead.
Because there was talk early on that Fantastic Four and X-Men might do a crossover because they own both those properties, and they might do a Fantastic Four X-Men crossover. As this movie came closer to being released, it then got announced that no, separate universes.
Yeah.
So now, oh no. Yep. Turns out that was Earth 2 or whatever. It's DC's Earth 2. We don't know. But anyhow, we're doing a new FF movie, but it's in the same universe as the X-Men.
Dude, that would be amazing.
I mean, the natural would be, let's do a Fantastic Four movie with a popular X-Men character, and there is no more popular than Wolverine.
Psylocke. Right. Oh, yeah. I think that, I mean, again, you know, I don't know, you know, Hugh Jackman, I think they want to use him like a, you know, an aging but quite good pitcher. You know, I think they want to bring him out sparingly as much as they can. I think it all comes down to sort of plot line or whatever, but
This is the third X-Men movie for which he said it's his final as Wolverine.
Yeah, but I mean, understand too that, like, the guy's in his mid-40s in training and everything else like that. Every time he's got to go do, and again, look how jacked he is compared to the first Wolverine. He keeps getting bigger and bigger, but that's one of the things all the Avengers sort of, you know, complain about is that the amount of training. You look at Chris Hemsworth when he's not playing Thor, and Chris Hemsworth when he's Thor, it ain't the same guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. By the way, I will say one last thing about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I was reading some of the footage they showed of Civil War. And people can read it if you would like the spoilers. All I will say is that the scene they showed is one in which they bring in Ant-Man into the fold of the side he is on. I really dug Ant-Man. I liked Ant-Man a lot. Cameo Ant-Man, I'm so excited for cameo, just one-liner, the funny guy in the group, Ant-Man. It is just like, just the description of that one scene and his dialogue was just so exciting to me. I am so thrilled for Civil War.
Wow. All right, right on. Hey, speaking of comics, I know we're about to start into picks. Justin, did you by any chance get around to reading Lock and Key? I don't want to...
No, okay. I haven't started reading it yet. Rereading it. I mean, I read through the first four graphic novels, and I haven't started picking it up yet. No.
Okay, well then I'll hold off on grilling you on that.
I'm still staring at the room.
Patreon. You can support us, patreon.com/weirdthings. That is where you can go ahead and give us money. We talk about a lot of things, many of them weird, some of them pop culture. This was one of the pop culture episodes. But if you dig on that and you want to hear more of what we would do with various different franchises for which we love, then go ahead and check it out. It is patreon.com/weirdthings. Thank you to everybody who makes this show possible.
Hey guys, pardon me, but is this the Parsec Award nominated podcast that we're talking about?
What?
Yeah.
Indeed. So that would be yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So those of you who don't know, Weird Things has been nominated for a Parsec Award with some very, 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 very accomplished other podcasts there. So there's that.
Yeah, never won a Parsec Award. It would be amazing to win a Parsec Award the same day I got married.
Oh, dude. I mean, could people vote or something? What can they do?
I think they have a committee of people who vote. So we can bribe, I'm sure. And I want a big shout out. Thanks to Bryce for his effort to put us out there and put us on the map and to go through all the work to go do that. And so without which it would not have happened.
So there we go. We have been nominated in Best Fact Behind the Fiction Podcast. The podcasts that explore the facts that influence the fictions, the science, the history, the culture, and the mythology that inspire the stories. The finalists are some other guys and us. So thank you very, very much to the Parsec Awards. So thank you to you guys for helping nominate us. And then, you know, we humbly submit to the podcast or the Parsec Awards that if we don't win, we'll curse you.
Well, or commit suicide. Our deaths will be on your hands.
Yeah, blood's on your hands.
Hey, real quick, I know we're about to start picks. Last week, my pick was Kim Stanley Robinson's Aurora. Have you, by any chance, did you get the chance to read it, Andrew? Okay. If you do, please talk to me about it. Because, like, of everyone I know, I think I would really, really dig your take on it.
All right, see what I can do. If it'll make you happy.
Okay, fine. So if we're picking picks, again, mine is Star Wars Rebels. I was really surprised at how, easy it was to fall into it. I really dug Star Wars Rebels. It's very much a kid show, but totally worth your, $20 to buy a season of it on Amazon.com. And, of course, you can watch it on Disney XD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Disney XD app, it's there. And they just started off with the season premiere for season two was with the Siege of Lothal. So it's fun.
Right on.
Here's my pick. My pick is about a family called the Smiths. It is a nonfiction story. It is about the dynastic rise of a family that has built generation on generation, starting at the turn of the 20th century, with a son of a preacher who was relocated from Long Island to Columbus. It is almost this Forrest Gump-like tale of America. This family is just involved in almost every element at the point where it is at its most interesting. American steel, finance, World War II, Ohio State football. Like it gets to a point, oil drilling. It gets to a point where it's almost ridiculous that these people are just because they are fairly, by the way of this nonfiction reporting, just fairly decent people. And eventually it ends with two of the main characters in the story becoming presidents of the United States. Hopefully you have enjoyed the idea of this story and therefore you will give it a non-political listen because, as I do, I just want to do my best to understand the world around me and understand that it is not the Smiths but the Bushes. It's a very well-written and well-reported story for what I've listened to it so far, and it gives you it has given me a fuller sense of this family for which, like it or not, and whether or not you agree with them politically, has been a part of our lives. And what I have taken from it is that if you disagree with them politically, they are probably pretty cool with you because the idea of their family and where their family has come from was different than where I thought it came from based on this book. So go ahead and check it out. It is on Audible. The Bushes by Peter and Rochelle Schweizer.
Speaking of producers of content who have the same last name as the other partner in there, I watched a movie. I had two different people recommend this to me. Said, hey, you should check this out. I think, Brian, you may have seen this. And I remember the sci-fi story that it was based upon, so that affected my viewing of it, but I still enjoyed it nonetheless. If you like good, solid, classic science fiction, unless you have no soul, you probably love Robert Heinlein a lot. And Robert Heinlein material has been tried repeatedly to be adapted into films, and sometimes it actually works, or sometimes it works in low-budget ways, or overall works. You know, the biggest one, you know, comes to mind is Starship Troopers, which I think is it's a movie that still holds up. It's a fun movie, and
so
I think
good.
And Verhoeven captured a lot of what the satire and a lot of things that Heinlein was really trying to get at that eludes a lot of people. A lot of people think that it's this jingoistic kind of thing. Like, no, go read the, you know, Heinlein was a complex guy who saw a lot of, you know, that.
By the way, side note, Verhoeven's two best movies are Starship Troopers and Black Book, which is two very different films, but for whatever reason matches the very odd sense that that Paul Verhoeven has as a director.
For the record, I'm gonna do you the favor as a friend pretending you said RoboCop or Total Recall. Yeah.
Yeah. And the among his best films.
Among his best films.
So anyhow, there was an adaptation years ago of the Puppet Masters of his, which I thought was pretty fun, pretty cool. This is an adaptation of a short story. I'm not even going to name the short story because if you know the short story, you go read it, then it might influence you. The less you know, the better. And I'm talking about Predestination, okay? So the Spherig brothers previously directed the movie called Daybreakers, which was kind of in a world where like everybody's pretty much a vampire, which was fun. I would say that it was 80% to being really awesome, 20% a little uneven, but I still really enjoyed it. So they did Predestination, stars Ethan Hawke, and I thought it was a very, very solid, fun movie. If you like classic sci-fi, it's not a big, huge movie. It's more like an extended Twilight Zone episode, okay? Right now, it's only available, I think, for rental or to buy. It's not on Netflix yet or anything else yet, but I think if you like classic sort of stuff, it involves time travel and a time-traveling temporal agent, and I watched it last night and really had fun with it, enjoyed it. But again, it's not going to be for everybody. Some people are going to be like, what's this? You know, I'm like, well, I warned you. It won.
That's a ringing endorsement. That why is that not on the movie poster? I warned you, Andrew Main.
But I mean, just so you know, it won awards-wise. It won like After Dark. It won like the Toronto After Dark Film Festival Special Award for Best Sci-Fi Film, Best Screenplay. Audience Award for Best Feature, which is, you know, a smaller festival, but still a pretty cool festival, a lot of cool things into it. So it was second place for Audience Award and Feature Film. And it won some other awards there too. So I think it nominated and won. So I think I enjoyed it. I had two different friends tell me, have you seen this? And they both liked it and I liked it.
Are you excited for Man in the High Castle coming back with a full decent budget and whatnot?
So I heard the budget for the original was a lot higher than I realized.
Oh, no.
Because I'm like, wow, and you still had like really bad green screen effects. I'm excited. I'm hopeful. I think that it's a big, ambitious thing. And I think with enough time and all that, I'm excited to see what the filmmakers do.
Is Ethan Hawke the best replacement level leading man ever? Like, he is competent that in a good script, he can shine. In a bad script, he doesn't really elevate it. But like he has found himself, he's such a, like he is compelling enough that we always want to see him. He's certainly more charismatic than like a Paul Walker or something like that.
Sure.
But not quite a charisma monster that we want to always follow from movie to movie.
I would agree with that. He's the Kevin Bacon of the 21st century, right?
Oh, I don't know. I think Kevin Bacon is somebody that, like, charisma-wise, you kind of want to follow. People watch things because Kevin Bacon is in it. I don't think
They do now, but I remember, like, back in the 80s, there was some, like, Showtime exclusive interview, and he said, look, I am not as talented as other actors, which is why I have to work twice as hard. And I would believe that about Ethan Hawke as well.
Well, except... Yeah, go ahead.
My favorite Kevin Bacon story, and I mean it's a sad part of his life, is that after he accepted the role for Tremors, that he fell on the ground, literally walked out of the office and fell down on the ground in front of his wife, just so upset with where his career had gone, just so upset with, look what's happened to me, I'm doing this underground worm movie, this is what's happened, and it's such an awesome movie now that, you know, in the lore of Bacon, it's like, thank you for doing that movie and elevating that movie, because you and Fred Ward are just awesome.
Well, I mean, he's Kevin Bacon, a legendary good guy, was so nice on the set of Super and made such an impression on James Gunn that when James Gunn does Guardians of the Galaxy, he makes Kevin Bacon the echoing, you know, hero of Earth in that script, you know, to prove how amazing he is in Footloose. So, you know, Kevin Bacon's great. And I really like Ethan Hawke. I think to say he is replacement level, like, you know, is probably too catty
of a term, because you need supreme, very specific skill to be a leading man in Hollywood, to be a leading man for movies. Like, that's not everybody can do it. There are many, 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 many people who try and either A, aren't selected to do it, or B, can't carry it if they are chosen. Ethan Hawke can. It's just very interesting, you know, where he is.
You know, and it's weird because you always want to know what the story is behind the story, and how difficult it is for actors out there and the people you recognize, you know, and you like. And then you go, like, you know, Ethan Hawke, you know, the mid to late 90s had a great stretch. And then, you know, for whatever reason, we didn't see him in some of these other kinds of films. And then, you know, he pops up in, you know, a movie like Predestination, which is a small movie. He was in Daybreakers too, worked with him in that movie. And then he pops up in this, and I think does a great job. I think he does a really, really good job of it. He did the Purge for Blumhouse. So, you know, he's working, a consistently working guy who works a lot, and everybody knows who he is. But, you know, Hollywood's weird.
And was in Sinister, right? He was in Cargill's movie.
Yep.
Yeah, he was the lead there. And did well enough that there's a sequel, you know. So cheers to Ethan Hawke. You know, the hard hat leading man of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. How's it been, bros?
It's been Star Wars Land. We didn't even talk about that. Weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.